listening to the Top Music Guitar Podcast, the show for guitar teachers to learn about the craft of teaching great guitar lessons that students love. If you're looking to start or expand your studio and make guitar teaching your full-time dream job, you've come to the right place. Each week, you'll get to hear from some of the top guitar teachers from around the globe and get their best tips and experiences so that you too can build your own dream studio. I'm your host, Michael, and I've founded one of the top guitar schools in Australia, written a best-selling curriculum, and I mentor guitar teachers. I'm excited to share my expertise with you and the wisdom of all the experts we interview. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Top Music Guitar Teaching Podcast. As always, I've got fantastic guest lines up and today's going to prove no exception. But before we dive into it, I'm just going to bring a word up about Guitar Ninjas. If you are a guitar teacher and you are looking for a curriculum in your school or your guitar teaching studio, then I highly recommend you jump on board Guitar Ninjas. Not only is it a modern method for learning guitar suitable for all ages, it combines martial arts with learning psychology and video game gamification into the ultimate method for learning guitar. It's going to come with some added business training and years of content, which is pre-planned for you, so you'd never have to waste time preparing content ever again. So if you want to save tons of time in your business while making lots of money, then get on board with Guitar Ninjas, which comes at a discounted price for all our Top Music Pro members. So getting back on topic for today, I've got another author, someone who has a unique approach to teaching guitar that I've been very curious about. I unfortunately at this point in time have not read his book. It's on my to-do list and the big backlog of all the authors we have on here. There's more authors and more books for me to read than I simply have time for, but this one's pretty high on my priority list. So let's welcome Michael Haworth. Haworth? How do I say that there, Michael?
Yeah, it's Haworth. It is Haworth.
We'll put that one on my Aussie accent there. But Michael Haworth, welcome to the Top Music Guitar Teaching Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Pleasure to be here. Really excited to do this. Thank you very much.
So I've probably reached out to you probably 12 months ago as one of the first people I wanted to get on the podcast, and the timing just wasn't right at that point in time. But I think about 50 episodes in now, or you might actually be the episode 51. We're about 20 weeks ahead of the podcast at the moment. But in terms of by the time you listen to this, we'll have just done our 50th episode or thereabouts, and it's taken us 12 months, but it's great to have you on board.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it's exciting to talk about this, so thank you for the opportunity, Michael.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and as my listeners, they know, I always promise a real treat for them, and today's going to be no exception. So, Michael, can you give our listeners a brief background about your story so far and your journey from a guitarist to a teacher and now someone who's been professionally teaching for 25 years, teaching over 30 during that time to various capacities. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your experience so far?
Yeah, I mean, getting into music, as I was really little, always something I wanted to do. We had lots of music in the house growing up. My mum and dad, even though they weren't musical in terms of playing instruments, they were both really into music and lots of music on the TV and records and everything. So I always knew it was something that I wanted to do. I was the musical one. My brother was he was the sporty one. So we're kind of always encouraged to follow those sort of paths. I had a grandparent, my granddad on my mum's side, he was musical, was a fantastic pianist. And he played church organ, as did my uncle as well, my mum's brother. But it was never anything that was in our house. So it was always something I wanted to do. But initially, I didn't even want to play the guitar. It was the drums. I wanted to be a drummer. But we had not the space. We had a three-bedroom little house. It was a terraced house. We had neighbours to think about. So it was never going to be the drums. Even though I attempted on the pots and pans, the usual kind of things. But yes, it was just too noisy. So I had a cousin who was a guitarist, and just visiting her, just sort of picking it up and having a little bit of a go on that. It was something that I wanted to carry on. So my mum and dad got me a guitar. It was a Christmas present or a birthday present, I think, when I was about 10 years old. And they wanted me to do it properly. So it was get some lessons and just see how we go with this. And to be honest, the first teacher I had was not a particularly good teacher. It sort of put me off a little bit. I can remember because there were Saturday morning lessons, and I used to have a little 3/4 size guitar, and I'd trot on down to his house. He didn't live that far from where we lived. And I used to not enjoy sort of waking up on a Saturday morning thinking, oh, I've got a guitar lesson. They weren't very engaging lessons, let's put it that way. But he eventually stopped doing guitar teaching. I don't think it was his thing. He was a great player. You could tell he was a great player, but just in terms of teaching, he just didn't have the sort of teaching skills. So we kind of found a different guitar teacher. He was the complete opposite of this. He was amazing. He was very engaging. He got you kind of playing all the things that I wanted to learn. I got my first electric guitar, and you know, we were doing a lot more sort of rock thing. The teacher before, it was all classical based, so very kind of, you know, counting in, and you know, that the I don't know, sort of quite an old-fashioned way of teaching. It just wasn't, it was, you know, very staid. It wasn't a nice sort of feeling. But the other guitarist, it was very, he made it sort of exciting, you know. So electric guitar, lots of different styles of music, lots of different techniques. And I kind of, you know, at that point I got the bug. That was when I got the bug, sort of being sort of that 13, 14-year-old, which is probably the best time because you're absorbing everything at that point.
I'll just jump in there because it's something I use almost the exact analogy that come 13, 14, especially with the boys, they get that rock bug and all of a sudden music becomes really important. It becomes part of their identity and they just take off of their own accord. And I'm always saying to parents, we just got to keep them in it until they get that 13, 14. And girls as well, music is just as important for their identity, but the boys almost take that sense of one-upmanship and put it into their guitar playing, especially if you have them in that group scenario where they're all trying to compete and outdo each other. But just an observation I made in the overlap of our stories there, which is really, really cool. So back to you, continue on.
Yeah. I mean, you said about the boys, I've noticed more over the past sort of 15 years that I don't know if it's the same with you, but a lot more girls taking up the guitar. It seems to be a thing where it's kind of, it's not seen as much as a sort of a male thing then anymore. I don't know if you've had that experience or not, Michael.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. I think, like, I can still clearly see that a lot more boys gravitate to electric guitar playing and hard rock and heavy metal, and a lot more girls are a bit more playing their pop songs and the kind of sing-along music they really like and enjoy. So I think there's still differences, but yeah, I'm seeing a lot more girls take it into their teen years, whereas most of them sort of, you know, would drop off at the end of primary school around about the age of 12 and go and find a different activity. So yeah, in terms of the longevity of the programs we have, there's definitely more girls taking it up. I think there's more girl guitar heroes to look forward to as well, which I think has been a very important thing as well, whether that's Orianthe or just this explosion of singer-songwriters. And I think that's, you know, one good thing to come out of Spotify and social media is so many more girls are just doing it. And I don't want to generalize. I don't want to make any assumptions here, just some general observations. But I notice a lot more of the girls are just doing it as a nice little fun hobby or a means of self-expression. And just with the technology now, so many more people can just take a video on their phone or take a photo and put it out and share it with the world. And maybe there was always tons of girls playing things to themselves in their bedroom, but now we can all get that fly on the wall look and become a bit more aware of it. But regardless of what is the cause, I think it's a good outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's, yeah. I mean, just going back to what we were saying before even when I was at school, there wasn't even that many guitarists in my year at school. That was you know, you could count them on one hand. It wasn't a thing. I came from quite a sort of small town. I live in Lancashire in the UK, and it was sort of north of Manchester. I don't know if you know where Manchester is in the UK. Yeah. Northwest. So the town I lived in, it was kind of lots of people into football and things like that. The music scene wasn't really a thing at the time, so there was kind of me and a few others. There weren't that many guitarists in school, so I think it must have been more from just wanting to be like the people I see on the TV. And didn't in school, there wasn't guitar lessons. It wasn't a thing actually in school. You couldn't get guitar lessons in school, so you had to go and look for them outside of school. And even the music classes in school weren't brilliant. So they were very kind of old-fashioned. You know, it would be lots and lots. Although I do like classical music, it was heavy stuff, you know, like the music teacher would be sort of conducting the record player, that sort of thing. That
yes,
really, really odd music lessons, but again, not engaging. So this thing about sort of wanting to be playing things like the guitarist I heard, I don't know, I just felt like I had to kind of plug on and just keep doing it. I was very lucky. I had an amazing form tutor. So when you're at school in the UK, I don't know if it's the same over where you are, but you have your subject teachers. So you'd have like your maths teacher and your French teacher, or whatever. But before the sort of start of the day, you'd have your form tutor where you'd go in and they'd take the register and just let you know what was going on in school. And this guy, because I was a real sort of shy individual, I had no confidence at all. He discovered that I played the guitar. So there was this sort of one thing that he thought, well, you know, that's something that will possibly help him with his confidence, you know, bring him out in himself. And he ran at school. He was a science teacher. He wasn't even a music teacher. He was a science teacher. They run a folk group. So folk music wasn't even anything that I'd remotely been interested in. You know, and I'm talking sort of traditional folk as well. So like Irish folk music, you'd have tin whistles, mandolins, boron, drum, accordions, all those kind of instruments. And it kind of dragged me along, got me to be involved in that. And I felt sort of a little bit of, you know, where I was the same as these other people. They were from different years in the school as well. So it wasn't just my year that I was mixing with them. You were mixing with other people and getting involved and doing concerts as well. So this was a big thing, sort of getting involved with doing performances and, you know, in front of some fairly large crowd. We did recordings. It was, you know, a really, really good experience. Just at that stage in my life that I needed that bit of confidence. So, you know, just to push me on. So I always think about that as music. With music, it's not just about kind of the act of playing a guitar. You know, the music kind of gives you these other skills, you know, like your confidence, being able to be part of something, and kind of organizational skills. All these other extra things that are not just based around playing your instrument. It's all this other stuff that goes on with it. We did all this sort of stuff. I could have carried on doing music at high school, you know, after I did it as a GCSE, which is the exam you take when you're, I mean, high school in the UK is from 11 to 16. So when I reached 16, I took my GCSEs and I was actually top of the class doing music there. So I'd, you know, there's lots of kind of classical stuff on the theory side of things. I understood it, that my brain sort of understood what was going on there, but I could have carried on doing music at school in the sixth form, but the careers teacher sort of took me to one side. He said, this isn't the course for you. He said, this is an amazing course. It's a local college, but I'd never even heard of this. So there's sort of a bit of a sliding doors moment where I could have gone and just carried on doing A-level music, but it was called the Lancashire Music Foundation course. And it was to do A-levels, which is the subjects before you go to university. So that 2 years of college, but they did all the classical stuff, all the sort of, you know, the Bach harmony, all that business. But there was this other side, because it was like a new way of teaching that level of music. And it was all recording. We had swing band. We had to do choir. One of the things we had to do was choir as well. So we had to, you know, it was very involved. And so once I moved up to that, I decided to go to college rather than staying at the sixth form. So I had to go to college and do my levels at Nelson College. Probably the best decision I've made, you know, just in terms of of direction to go. And it was, you know, you kind of meet him because, you know, you get in school, you have your friends in school. It's quite a big step to go and do something. You don't know anybody. But again, everybody had this music in common, you know, that you were putting it on a course, and these amazing musicians from, they're kind of all over the Northwest. It wasn't just from the area that it was in. They were drawing people in because it was such a good course. We had some amazing teachers, you know, just the ones who taught you the sort of theory side of stuff and everything. And we had amazing, because at that point, and we had that was the first time we had lessons inside the course that you were doing. So before, you'd have to go outside. So I just had to stop my lessons with this amazing guitar teacher I was talking about before. He's a guy called Dave Duxbury, by the way. He sadly passed away last year, which was quite sad. But anybody around this area who's played guitar would have had lessons with Dave Duxbury. He was the dude, the guitar dude. Anyway, so moving on to college, and I had lessons with a guy called Gary Boyle. He was my guitar teacher. He's an amazing guy, and he's still around. I was still in touch with him as well. But this guy was a session player in the 60s in London. So you can imagine the sort of people that he came across. He knew the Beatles. He knew he'd worked with the Stones. He was friends with Jimi Hendrix, which kind of, you know, sort of 17-year-old teenager, that blew my mind, that he was this sort of friend of Jimi Hendrix. So, but he taught, he was a big jazz player. He was more sort of jazz based than kind of rock based, but he used to, everything that we learned at that point was sort of jazz based. So that a lot of my theory comes from understanding jazz harmony and rhythms. And we played the swing band, so he did lots of these sort of syncopated rhythms, being able to read charts and things like that. So yeah, very, very, very kind of you know, that side of my playing. It's a lot comes from the jazz side of things. But from there, I went to university. I studied, it was a popular music recording course at Salford University. So that and again, you met all these amazing musicians. A lot of them have gone on to do really, really good, quite high level sort of session work and playing in bands that you've probably heard of. So yeah, it was a real sort of eye opener, you know. So going from this person who couldn't even just like speak in front of people to, you know, mixing with all these people, have this thing in common, and being able to perform in front of people. After college, my wife, well, at that time she was my girlfriend. I still wanted to be kind of, because I was in bands and things like that. I still wanted to become a professional musician. So I got a day job. I was doing the gigs in the evening, which is like sort of a common story, I'm sure. But eventually, the job that I was doing, the day job, I ended up having to leave that. And my wife had said, you know, just why don't you do something like with your guitar teacher? Because this is something I'd done a little bit of before. And she said, you know, there was an advert in the newspaper for one of the local schools that I teach at, that came, you know, for teaching lessons. So she said, go for that, see if you can get the a teaching job doing guitar teaching. So I auditioned for that job and ended up getting that, and that was the first sort of proper guitar teaching job that I did. And it was in a it's a school I still teach at now, so this was 22 years ago, so 2001, I think. So wow. A long time. So teaching at that school for a long time. So
that's amazing.
So it's quite a long road into teaching. But yeah, it's yeah, there you go.
Excellent. And obviously you've been in the game for a long time. How much has your approach to teaching changed from 22 years ago, or even beyond that, when you were doing a little bit of stuff on the side during the university days, right up until now, where you've got your own books and obviously a wealth of experience to build upon?
My teaching started pre-internet. So it was before we had any internet. So I mean, that is probably the most major change. I can remember, because I started when I was doing my A-levels at college. One of my lecturers, my teacher, he sort of saw that I was kind of just how I was, I think, in swing band rehearsals and things, so just explaining things to people. He saw that side of my personality. So he set me up with some lessons, teaching people who he knew. And there were some people not on the music course who wanted guitar lessons. So, and I did some at home. I sort of carried that on and did some lessons when I still lived at my mum and dad's house. So that's where it all started. It was all pre-internet. So it would be kind of just me showing how to play things. And it was literally just, right, this is how you do this. Write it down. It wasn't really kind of going into depth about anything. It was just do this. There was no real planning, none of that. It was just, let's play some stuff. So it's kind of, you know, no real thought got into it. So there were lots of, you know, in terms of material, lots of sort of copied sheets. It would be focus on pieces of music where, I mean, like techniques, I'd be teaching people techniques at the same time as learning a song. So it's not like the ideal way, kind of. That's not how I teach anymore. It's a bit more structured. I mean, now the way I teach would be rather than sort of give a song and say, right, we're going to look at this song and then just go into it sort of blind. Now, so you look at techniques that we're going to be learning a specific song. You know, we look at the techniques before and then apply them to various like pieces that you're learning, things like that. So it was a backward way of teaching. So, you know, like I say, it's a lot more structured now. But yeah, the thing I really struggled with at first was teaching really young pupils. And that was the thing that you know, I could teach it. Say if they were over sort of 10 years old, I'd have absolutely no problem. We'd you know, make plenty of progress, but it was the really little ones. So I'd really struggle with getting, I don't know, maybe sort of 5-year-old pupils, how to teach those. And I knew that I had friends who taught younger ones, but they would teach them like piano and other instruments, and they could do it. And I was thinking, how could I do that? A lot of my teaching is actually in schools now. I work for the local authority, so it's Lancashire Music Service, and it's run by the county council. And I do a lot of going in schools just as a freelancer as well. But we have inset days as part of our training, so we do lots of training. And I'm always constantly asking other instrumentalists that aren't guitarists, how do you do this? How do you, like drum teachers, how do we teach like that sort of rhythm? How would you go about it? Because I like to sort of absorb different ways of doing things from other instrumentalists that might not, you know, you forget about doing your guitar because we get stuck in this sort of guitar bubble, don't we? It's just that. But if you ask a trumpet player, how do we teach them different pitches? How does the trumpet work? So, you know, you can kind of take things from that. So in terms of the little ones, when I used to really struggle with the little ones, at first I would teach them how I would, like a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old, and it doesn't necessarily work because they're, you know, that the reading skills aren't as good. You know, even reading just sentences. So you're giving them pieces of sheets of meat and it just looks, it's too much for them. So you sort of have to rein it back a little bit. And we focus on, I mean, now how I teach, it's a lot more focused on basic elements of music. So we would do, like, you know, looking at pulse, rhythm and pitch are the first three that we focus on. So pulse in terms of, you know, just keeping in time with the beat. So a lot of it is, and we do this because I teach full classes as well. So we have, you know, 30 children. Like yesterday at the school I was teaching, it's a full day at a primary school. So that's right from reception, 4-year-olds right up to the 11-year-olds in year six. So I do a full day going into the classes there. We start off with the really little ones. It's lots of pulse games, and not even on the guitars at first. It's just using percussion instruments, classroom percussion instruments, boom whackers and things like that. And it's circle games, you know, passing claps round and doing a double clap thing, but in time with like backing tracks, but just getting used to feel the pulse and then clapping rhythms over the pulse, even reading rhythms. So that at first I found very difficult, and I sort of carried that into my teaching in terms of guitar teaching when I'm teaching privately with youngsters now. So I mean, I've got some guitar lessons now who are reception age, reception year one. So I'm actually quite proud of the fact that I can do that, that my teaching has changed, that I'm able to do that. And we do, I mean, talking about my book, I wanted it to be able to, so I could teach, so I could put this in front of a 4 or 5 year old, and they would get it. I could kind of show them and they would be able to read it in the book, and they would understand it, and then that would get them going on. So yeah, I mean, that was probably the main thing that's changed, apart from the internet, the introduction of the internet and all the things that using a computer does. I would say sort of my approach to teaching really, really young learners. Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm just amazed. I'm still trying to fathom like what the world was before the internet. And we were having a joke before we hit the record button and started going live, just about how busy life is with kids. And I'm often trying to explain to our teenage kids like what used to happen before the internet. Like you actually had to go outside and do things, or if you didn't know the answer to a question, you would have to like really search for it or try and find someone. I think that was almost, not to go off on a tangent here, but one of the really awesome things about discovering guitar and heavy metal music especially was the fact that there was just so much mystique around your favorite player. Like someone like Slash, it was like, oh my God, the top hat, the hair, he's almost like a cartoon character, or a certain heavy metal band from Norway, which there was a CD out and one biography in one book, and that's the only place you could find out more about them. So I think, unfortunately, this is almost lost on music fans of these generations, is the fact that they know everything at the the touch of a phone instantly. There's that lack of magic around music, and it's definitely for the better sometimes in terms of how easy it is for modern people to just access a wealth of information. But also on the flip side of that, there's such a wealth of information out there on the internet, but there's also 10 times the amount of really terrible content, or even the right content in the wrong order can really confuse or overwhelm people. So, you know, guys, don't have to worry about ChatGPT replacing you or the internet replacing you as a guitar teacher. There's always going to be a place for you to help out frustrated people who can't learn from a video or a page on the internet, even if there's some great content out there. But yeah, really interesting to hear your thought. And I think the last little thing to reflect upon is the fact that you tried, as many people do and fail, teaching 5-year-old the same way you would a 10-year-old. But the level of development, the difference in their level is just astronomical, even at those ages there, in terms of their comprehension, their understanding, their fine motor skills. So you really have to break it down. So, you mentioned playing some games. Are you able to go into a little bit more detail on this topic of pulse? You said pulse, rhythm, and pitch. Can you tell us a bit more about that and maybe some games as examples?
Yeah, I mean, the just taking, for example, like what I was doing with one of my classes that was doing yesterday, and we were looking at a piece, and it's a simple piece that uses the three open treble strings, so your E, B, and G, and your A note, fretted A note on your third string. And this, bear in mind, this is a class of 30 children, so you're getting them to listen. It's all about listening. And we would do simple rhythms, just starting on one string. So you'd start on your E string, and you would play a simple da 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 da, and they would copy it back. So it's a copying game at first. So they're focusing on the rhythm, and the set of notes, by the way, the notes that we were practicing for a piece that we'd learned. So it's a simple piece, one of the pieces from the book. But it's just a really, really simple idea. So just starting on your E note, A E E E E E, they'd play it back, and then you would change the rhythm. There are certain rhythms that they were not allowed to play back, by the way. We have, I don't know if you've done these sort of games before or not, but there are the rhythms, is the fingers on your lips rhythm, fingers on your lips. And if they hear that rhythm, then they have to do that. It's a good one if you've got, you know, for classroom management as well. So if you're talking and you've got like kind of little pockets of people talking, you can clap that rhythm or play it on the guitar and it will just instantly stop if they're very good at that game, especially the younger ones, because they want to sort of show that they know what they're doing. But the other thing we could do with that as well once we've got these rhythms, we can sort of, we use rhythm grids for the music service. We have there's a program that's like a kind of thing that we can log on to called Charanga. I don't know if you've heard of Charanga or not.
No, I'm not familiar with the Charanga.
Okay. It
sounds like a nice Mexican dish.
It does. Well, don't make me start thinking about food this time of day. I'm hungry already. So we have the big whiteboards, and you can put on these interactive whiteboards, and we can drag. So it's like a 4x4 grid, and we can drag on the it's like a crotchet or two quavers. We have crotchets, two quavers, four semi-quavers, or a quaver rest and a quaver on this grid. And you can press play, and it will play like a drum beat behind it. And you can get them to, so the rhythms that we're playing, you can get them to notate as well. So you ask them what notes we would use, get them to clap their own rhythms. So these are sort of the pulse games that we would play. And on this rhythm grid, it can kind of flip it around. So it changed, or you can shuffle the notes around. So just get them to read rhythms and things like that. But then what we would do, so we'd be playing, just say your E string, E, 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 and then you'd chuck a B in there, okay, without telling them that you were going to do that. And some children would get it, some children wouldn't. So you'd sort of say, what happened there? And hands would go up, it changed. So you sort of try and get that musical dialogue, you know, using the vocabulary, the proper vocabulary. So what is it that changed? So if you've... I mean, we've done that lots of talking about this, so it's pitch. So you know the pitch is high and low sound. So, right, okay, the pitch has changed. What's it done? Has it gone high? Has it gone higher? Has it gone lower? So because we've gone to a B, it's gone lower. I mean, and that's one of the things on the guitar as well, isn't it? Because of we talk about it going higher and lower, but obviously on the guitar, the strings the other way around. So the string that's nearest to your nose is the lowest pitch string. Which at first, if you're on a piano, it's easy to explain. So the high notes are at that side, the low notes are at that side. On the guitar, we're going kind of two ways, aren't we? We're going towards your nose for the lower pitch strings, and then we're going this way along the neck to get the high. So we call this going up, even though it's across. It's sort of just getting them used to that. Things that we would take for granted, because we play guitar forever, so we know what's going on in the guitar, we know how it works, but just getting them to understand that. So when we talked about going up and down, they understand which direction they're going. So we add in different notes all the time, add in a fretted note, and then by the end, after sort of 10 minutes of doing this short sort of game with the added rhythms that they're not allowed to play about. There's the now be a statue. Now be a statue. Fingers on the lips. Where they're not allowed to play them back. Once we've added all these into it, they've actually got a good grasp of what's going on pitch wise. So I mean, a lot of the teaching I do as well uses notation. We do use tablature, which is kind of the guitarist's friend, isn't it? Tablature, but I'm a big advocate of using notation to teach, just because it shows you what's going on musically. We see kind of how notes are going up and down. You can sing a melody as well. So we get them to sing, we get them to say the notes, and they can see the different pitches. You give them the set of notes, and then being able to internalize what they're going to play before they actually play, that's really important as well. I mean, you can't really do that with tablature. We just sort of use tablature to show you. If you get stuck where to find the notes on the guitar, that's when I'll say, well, use the tablature if you can't find where they are, if you don't know where they are. But yeah, just using those sort of games. But we do things like, because we talk about when they get a little bit older, we talk about things like texture, and we talk about things like timbre. So we do games like, you know, they close their eyes and get somebody to say the word timbre in the poshest voice they can. So you get these little kids trying to disguise their voices. So just to explain all the different, the tiny little bits of sort of element and things like that. But it all these little bits of information and these little bits of, it, you know, it's the the vocabulary of music, you know, just so we're not just sort of looking at the guitar as the be all and end all. It's so they understand music as like a whole thing. Okay, that's my approach anyway, especially with the younger ones, just to get that good grounding, so they know what's going on.
Yeah, that all sounds amazing. And anytime I've taught through games, the kids are always so much more engaged. They get so much more out of it. And just passively building up, I think a lot of people underestimate the importance of how much they might feel like they, you know, they started guitar for the first time age 15. But if they've gone through a primary school program like that, elementary school program, where they've been exposed to music just consistently, it makes a huge difference in their comprehension and ability to pick things up a bit later on, which some of us forget about or unaware of. But it sounds like you're doing some amazing things with the kids. It sounds like a very fun place to be learning.
Yeah, I think I'm lucky, you know, that the school, because it's not consistently like that throughout all primary schools as well. There's a lot of music. They're supposed to have music in school, but I think a lot of it isn't as good as it should be, you know, for various reasons, just depending on which school you go to. I'm very lucky. The schools that I go into, they make music a massive part of their, you know, what goes on in a school week. And you can see that actually, it kind of, it goes through into other aspects of their learning, how there's, you know, that it helps develop, you know, like, how, you know, memory and things like that. There's been some great research that I don't think they've done it in, I think it's in America, where they've done research on how learning a musical instrument affects the brain and how it's really good for the brain. It's like a kind of a workout for the brain. And you see this in a lot of the schools that you go into that actually teach music in that way. They're the sort of top achieving schools in the area. So yeah.
It's going to absolutely bug me. I know, I believe her name's Anita. She's a really good friend of Tim, who runs the Main Piano podcast. She's been on a bunch of times, but yeah, she's like a neuroscientist turned music teacher, or a music teacher turned neuroscientist. And she's doing tons of research into this topic of, you know, the brain on music. And she's coming up with some amazing discoveries. So maybe our podcast editor listens to this and puts the link to the, I'm pretty certain her name's Anita. I'll figure out who it is and I'll post the relevant link, but there's some really amazing things with those connections. And I think I even read a study last week, because I sent it to a student who was, the parent wanted to withdraw from lessons and said, oh, look, you know, he wants to prioritize school. He's obviously like a 15, 16-year-old boy. He's going, sports getting a bit busy, and he wants to prioritize his studies. So we'll make the decision to cut music. And I just sent her an article about this study in America, where I think something like 86% of the highest performers during whatever the final year of high school in America were all actively doing music lessons during their final year. And, you know, that obviously speaks volumes about the importance of music lessons in the memory capacity, the cognitive ability, the stress relief benefits, and that, you know, 86% of all these high performing students were all active music students during their, you know, testing and things like that. So, you know, if you want to have a smarter kid, or to stimulate their brain, or, you know, get them engaged in learning, then one of the best things you can do is get your kids in music lessons. But I know we don't need to explain that to you or our audience, because we're preaching to the choir there.
That's it. But yeah, I mean, it's something that's kind of, even in schools, you find that you're having to sort of, because in the high schools that I teach at, I do a lot of one-to-one lessons, and we have our timetable, and you find yourself, you wonder where the pupil is. They've not turned up to the lesson. You have to go walk around the school into your science lesson or whatever, and grab the pupil out the lesson. And it's even the other subject teachers are not necessarily on board with that, which is a shame. I think it's sort of something that's very undervalued. That you know, how music helps with other subjects. So.
Yeah, and I think we're always going to have that ongoing battle in terms of, you know, it's an art versus something which is potentially more practical. And, you know, I look back and I actually really didn't like the first 2 years of my musical education, and similar to what you've said, where you just had a teacher who wasn't really engaged or switched on. and very dull, often academic approaches to teaching in a classroom, which work for the 10% of kids who are super intuitive, which, you know, I kind of was at one point, but music lessons just didn't resonate with me. And being, you know, over 6 foot tall, it was the last two periods on a Friday afternoon in year 7 and 8. And it had those, we had those chairs where the desk and the chair are the same thing. And it was obviously made for people who are about 12 years old, 13 years old. And it was just the worst 2 hours having to listen to our teacher's favorite classical music. And she was an amazing teacher, but it was just, you know, trying to feed us the vegetables, so to speak. We just didn't want a bar of it. And I didn't like music until I played my cousin's guitar in year 9, you know, 3 years later. And from that moment, from getting a guitar put in my hand, playing something, it was like getting hit by lightning. And I just knew straight away, I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And it's amazing at how 2 years earlier, I was like, oh man, I have this with languages. I'm like, what was the point of me learning a language in high school? I'm never going to learn it, never going to use it, got no interest in it. I would have much rather taken that hour, the 3 hours a week, and put that into guitar playing or something with a bit more practical application. I was the exact same thing about music in year 7 and 8. No, I kind of enjoyed it, loved listening to music, but it's like, this is a complete waste of time doing this. And then it just went a complete 180 as soon as I was put in the right context with the right teacher. So it's an amazing, that's anyone listening to this just needs to be able to reflect upon, how do you want to be remembered as a teacher? Do you want to be the boring teacher that made music the worst experience or a really unengaging experience for kids? Or do you want to be the teacher who sparked that creativity? And we can all remember back to our favorite teacher in high school, maybe primary school as well, but we can always remember our best high school teacher or our best university teacher. We want to be remembered like them because we made a difference. We made learning fun. We connected with our students. So, Michael, I do want to get on to asking you about your book. So what inspired Bite Size Guitar?
I think it was the fact that I needed to do a lot more planning when I was teaching. I was saying before about when I first started teaching and all my pupils, I was just sort of going through teaching songs, but not really any kind of planning involved. And I think when I started teaching in schools, especially high schools, they wanted to see your planning. So you kind of think, right, okay, I need to get on this. So, and I would kind of write little pieces. I would do, if we were looking at a particular technique or, you know, a particular element of music or how to play, you know, maybe looking at how to read music or anything like that, I would write these little pieces and just sort of keep them to one side and then keep referring back to them and using them in the other lessons. So that's where it's kind of born out of the planning that I did for these lessons. But I think I was using a lot of material, beginner's books, especially with the beginner lessons, because that was, you know, the bite-sized guitar book is aimed at beginners. It's people who don't even know which way around to hold a guitar or what anything's called. But it started off just by kind of wanting to be able to just go into, I was using a lot of different material, a lot of different books. And I felt you'd either find books that were aimed at really young players. So you'd have like a lot of the pieces would be called like, I don't know, the clowns or something like that. You know, something to do with elephants. Always have something to do with elephants, don't they?
Yeah.
Whole piece of music. So. And they're great. Those books are amazing. But they are just aimed at the younger player. And then I couldn't use them books to teach older pupils. I mean, I have pupils who are into the 70s, you know, who are a lot older people. So I teach a lot of young ones all the way through to the old ones. And I couldn't use I tried, but I felt a bit embarrassed about giving these pieces to the older players who, again, they were just starting, they'd be retired, they want to take up an instrument after they've retired. So you can't really give them those pieces as well. So I felt there was like a big gap in the middle. And a lot of the tuition books would dive straight in with things that they couldn't do. So I was thinking, what is it that they, what, why is it so tricky? So my approach then was to just to focus on one tiny aspect, and it might be playing one string. again, going back to the pulse thing, but playing in time with the pulse. The first piece in the bite-sized guitar book is an E note, and it's not even notated. It just says the letter E. And there were four E's. And then the importance of the silence as well, because, you know, understanding that we're making sounds and we're also making silences and being able to sort of feel the pulse when we're not playing and all that sort of stuff. And I used to enjoy kind of making up different styles. So I'd even ask them, I'd say, right, we're going to play this tune. What style shall we do this in? Just get them sort of discussing, having that conversation about sort of genre as well, which is another important aspect of music. So they'd say, right, okay, let's do it in a blues style. So you could do an easy kind of blues, just using the E note and do a kind of a blues backing. And they'd say, that sounds really good. And it was not my playing, but the fact that the sound of the two guitars together. So that kind of made me think about doing some backing tracks. So I'd write backing tracks for some of the tunes. And it came out of that. But a lot of the teaching as well, especially when you're in high school, because we have the graded system as well. I don't know if you do any of that in Australia. I don't think it's, but we have grades for, there used to be just classical guitar grades. And if you're playing exams, and you would get marks on your playing all the way up to grade 8, which is quite, you know, it's quite a high level of playing is grade 8. And they kind of look at, if you're doing GCSE music, so this is the exam when you're at the end of high school, they're looking for grade 5 level. So we sort of try and follow the syllabus for the graded guitar to get them up to that point, so that they're able to play at that standard when they take in do the practical side of the GCSE music exam. So we would my plan was with this book, because it's a beginning book, we didn't want to go, because grade five's it's a long way off, so it was just to get them started. So I aimed to get them from doing absolutely nothing up to round about grade one, just beyond grade one, but just to give them the skills so that they can learn those pieces and not sort of have any hiccups, or because you want them to sort of do as much independent learning as they can. So being able to go and find a piece of music and then think, all right, okay, I already have these skills to be able to play this piece of music. So that was kind of where the book came from. But yeah, just writing backing tracks. So the backing tracks, they're all written kind of pastiche style backing tracks with like kind of punny titles. So the titles, yep, for the titles. Yep. That was the most difficult bit, actually, coming up with the titles for the pieces. I found that the most difficult bit. Some of them are kind of anagrams and things like that. So if you're sharp, I'm sure some teachers will sort of try and find out like what it is. But yeah, just having different styles as well. So they're not just all rock styles. I've put in some blues. There's some sort of jazzy sort of backing tracks, kind of reggae, dancey, sort of funky stuff, all sorts of different genres of music, just to get that. Because, I mean, you're going back to talking about kind of the impact that the internet has had, and how I think the biggest impact it's had as well from sort of a music point of view is the fact that music's listened to a lot differently now. When I was writing the book, initially, I was going to do with CDs, and then I realized that people don't even have CD players anymore. So that was yeah, kind of a big hurdle as well. So it's sort of how to deliver the backing tracks to people. So they're online anyway. You can access them online, but just because I think especially younger ones, they listen to a lot of stuff on, you know, like Apple Music or Spotify or YouTube, or maybe even like kind of gaming, or they don't sort of engage with the radio like I used to when I was younger. Or, you know, you'd go and buy CDs or LPs or cassettes or whatever. Although there's just a bit of a resurgence in vinyl. It's not the same way of listening to music, you know, kind of the algorithm thing is taking over a little bit. So it's
And I would almost to add to that, people don't just sit down and listen to music anymore. It's almost always a background to something else. Like I specifically recall Chinese Democracy coming out and just sitting in the car and just driving and listening to it, and then just pulling over and listening to it. And I still do that now. Every time like an album I'm really waiting for comes out, it's like I've got to sit down and nothing else on, close the curtains, darken the room a little bit, or go for a drive and just listen to it and go, wow, look at all this stuff coming on. But then there's other music which Spotify pops up and says, oh, new release from this artist, and you listen to it while you're working or doing something else in the background and you miss a whole bunch of stuff, or it's a very background kind of thing, which I think is a real shame. And it's going to reflect in the fact that, you know, go back 30 years, 20 years, pre-internet days, there were so many more people with great ears because they had no other choice but to sit and listen and figure stuff out. Whereas now we have a whole bunch of people who are, you know, really spoon-fed and give up at the first obstacle because they're just not resilient like people used to be, but also because they're just so reliant on everything else. Now, it's amazing to see how many people can sight read tab now when, you know, sight reading used to be something that only happened to, you know, standard music notation, but the fact that they can hear it in their head and translate the numbers in real time is, you know, this is something else which is developing out of the current use of tab. So it's going to be a very different world. Not to have a back in my day kind of approach to it, but yeah, we're very keen to see what the future holds.
Yeah. It's interesting you say sort of about kind of approach to tab and the fact that they're all, it's there. There are lots of different websites that you can go on. So it's dead easy to find a tune that you would if you wanted to learn a tune. And if it's not there, that kind of having that ear training is something that I think people need to, you know, it's not done as much. Like if I was learning guitar and I wanted to learn a particular song and it weren't, because we'd rely on tab books, or your friend would have a tab book, or I remember VHS, there was some sort of VHS. this is going way back, but like,
sorry, what's the VHS?
But they had all the tuition videos, especially with all the kind of when the shred, like the 80s kind of shred guys came out, and
all the Starlicks things, yeah.
Do you know what I loved listening to your Frank Gambale interview, because he was kind of one of the ones who had an amazing set of videos that came out. So that was really interesting when listening to that one. But yeah, we'd be relying on listening to sharing. Or we had a fantastic music library in Burnley where I grew up, and you could go down on a Saturday morning and they had loads of transcription books, you know, the Appetite for Destruction and things like that you would go on and you'd be able to borrow it and then you'd pour through it and try to learn these tunes. But nowadays it's just all there, isn't it? It's instant. But if you couldn't find the tunes, you had to listen to them. You had to work them out. And it might not necessarily be 100% correct, but you'd be all the time training your ear how to hear things, which is something, again, that we work on in lessons. I mean, I always encourage all those things in my teaching. So we do a lot of working from books and from sheet music, but also the improvisation, incorporating that into your play, even at a really early age, just doing it with one note or two notes, being able to improvise rhythms and just listening and getting to listening and use sort of space in their improvising. They can do that from, you know, sort of 4 or 5 years old. It's a really good way of getting them into doing that side of stuff. We do that in the book as well. We do that in the in Bite Size Guitar. There's quite a lot of pieces that do just a set of notes and just let them do some improvisation, you know, just simple things without having to learn complicated scales. It could just be the other side. So you get used to phrasing and you know, see music, you know, guitar playing, not just as it doesn't have to be super complicated at first. It's really simple. But yeah, just and just looking at that the way that it's just the progression, so a really smooth progression. You feel like And I've had this feedback off a lot of the guitar teachers that use the book. They feel like that they're in a short space of time, but with a really smooth progression to get from one thing to the next thing. And then gradually all these skills build up, and then lots of reinforcing the skills that they've already learnt. And you know, it's all put together. And by the end, they've got a load of skills. You know, they know all the how to read, how to play. They've got all the basic chords. Being able to improvise those certain skills. Even working on aspects of music theory that the basic music theory at first, and introducing that alongside learning the guitar. So they're not sort of separate things. Everything's together. There's this one big thing.
Yeah, I think that speaks volumes about your method and your approach when you're approaching things like creativity and the connection of music theory, which, you know, in my experience, I got to the first year of my university degree before I ever did any sort of creativity training. And to go from starting guitar age 15 to just madly playing 6 hours a day, learning things to pass an exam, not dissing that because I loved every minute of it, but to then have to improvise at a tertiary standard was a very rude awakening for me. And, there was no books on improvisation. There was no guitar books on specific how to be creative or improvise. It was like, what do I do? So now part of what I do, and by the sounds of it, part of what you do, is you encourage improvisation and creativity from the very beginning. And often we make the mistake of going, okay, now you can play to a certain level. You can be creative with it. When in actual fact, as you said, you only need two notes, or sometimes even just one note and different rhythms to actually be creative. And it's a skill that if we wait 3 years to nurture it, we'll be a total beginner at it in 3 years. Whereas if we go, what does success look like, or what does creativity look like at this level to this capacity, even if it's five-year-old kids, we can actually do quite amazing things with them.
Mm. Yeah, and you forget that actually that way of playing, if you were to put an instrument in front of even going younger than that, sort of a two-year-old or whatever, they would sort of start playing and making sound with that instrument. And it's trying to get that into their playing, you know, the creative side. You know, we sort of do a lot of things, you know, singing, making little melodies up before we can even do, you know, like the first things that we do, kind of dancing. And it's not like specific moves that we learn, you know, when we're really little. It's just kind of moving to music and things like that. We sort of do that with an instrument, just taking simple ideas and it's that creative side that we do forget about sometimes. So I like to incorporate that into my teaching right from the start. I think it's important.
Most definitely. Now, Michael, we do have to bring this one in for landing, but where can our listeners connect with you and find out more about your books and what you're doing with Bite Size Guitar?
Yeah, I mean, my website, that's where the links to buy it are on my website, which is michaelhoweth.co.uk. It's also on Facebook, the Facebook page, which is Bite Size Guitar. Just search for that on Facebook. But you can get it if you just want to buy the guitar. It's on Amazon and Lulu. You can go direct to Lulu because I use print on demand service for it. But they're the main places where you can find me.
Fantastic. And we will make sure that we include links to all of those resources and social media profiles wherever you're listening to the podcast here. Michael, do you have any last tips or bits of wisdom you could share with our guitar teacher audience listening at home?
Yeah, I think it's important. You've got to make sure that, especially with the younger ones, make sure the parents are on board with what you're doing. Just to sort of get them involved with as much as you can with the pupils' practice, so that you're getting them into a good routine with practicing. And I think also you've got to assume that whatever you're teaching to your pupil, they know absolutely nothing about that subject. So you could be talking like about something that as basic as, right, we're going to go and do a picking four E notes. Going back to the other example, just assume they know absolutely nothing about that. So when we say picking, what does that mean? we're going downwards with the plectrum, just take it right back to basics. And also, I remember in our inset days that we get with the music service, they always say, especially with the young ones, just how you are with them. So smile. They like that. They like that. So children really, you know, just be nice and engaging and just make them happy. Make it something that they want to come and do with you.
I think that's some great advice there. So Michael, on behalf of our listeners and the Top Music Guitar community, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Guys, we'll make sure you check out him online and Bite Size Guitar. We'll post the links to where you can check it out. And of course, if you're interested in teaching his method or exploring a little bit more, I'm sure he'll be willing to talk to you about it. Michael, it's been a pleasure having you. Thanks once again. And we'll see and hear from everyone in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening, guys. See you next time.
Fantastic, Michael. Thank you so much.
If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, including a free ebook on how to find more guitar students, visit us at www.topmusic.co/guitar or check out the show notes. And lastly, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.